My guess is that the 1st Tank Battalion was relieved not because the men were badly depleted and debilitated, the official reason given, but because the machines were. Machines wore out or needed overhauling and maintenance, but men were expected to keep going. Tanks, Amtraks, trucks, aircraft, and ships were considered valuable and difficult to replace way out in the Pacific. They were maintained carefully and not exposed needlessly to wear or destruction. Men, infantrymen in particular, were simply expected to keep going beyond the limits of human endurance until they got killed or wounded or dropped from exhaustion. Our attack on the Horseshoe was preceded by terrific artillery fire from our big guns. The shells swished and whined toward the ridges for 2.5 hours. The mortars added their bit, too. The attack was surprisingly successful. The Horseshoe wasn't secured, but many Japanese were killed. We also knocked out many caves containing heavy guns, but only after several of the tanks took hits from them. In the estimation of the Marines, the Army tankers did a good job. Here the tanks operated with our riflemen attached. It was a case of mutual support. The tanks pulled up to the caves and fired into them point blank with their 75-millimeter cannon. Wham-bam! The machine guns never seemed to stop. A tank unattended by riflemen was doomed to certain destruction from enemy suicide crews carrying mines, and the riflemen got a lot of protection from the tanks. About the only instance I know of where tanks tried to operate without riflemen in the Pacific was a case of Army tanks on Okinawa. Predictably, the Japanese knocked out most of those tanks. Marine tanks always operated with riflemen, like a dog with his fleas. But with tanks and riflemen, it was mutually beneficial. After the attack of 7 October on the Horseshoe, 3-5 pulled back some distance from the ridges. Shortly thereafter, we again went up toward the northern part of the island. Between 8 and 11 October, we emplaced our 60-millimeter mortars between the west road and the narrow beach. We were only a few yards from the water. Thus set up, we fired over the west road, our front line beyond, and onto the ridges. We had an observer somewhere across the road who sent us orders by the sound-powered phone. We kept up a brisk rate of fire because Japanese had infiltrated into positions on the ridge next to the road and were sniping at vehicles and troops with deadly effect. Our mortar fire helped pin them down and clean them out. We had good gun emplacements among some rocks and were screened by a narrow strip of thick foliage between us and the road, and therefore from the enemy in the ridge beyond. I was extremely confused as to where we had left our company. An NCO told me our mortars were detached temporarily from Company K and were supporting another unit hard-pressed by snipers. The enemy were firing from positions that were almost impossible to locate, and they shot any and everybody they could, even casualties being evacuated by Amtraks. More than one desperate Amtrak driver, as he raced down the west road toward the regimental aid station, arrived only to find his helpless cargo slaughtered where they lay.